Hey friends, this is Josh. Before we start the show today, I have three simple questions for you. Are you a deck-building genius? Are you a mad scientist card slinger? And do you crave the satisfaction of battling the highest form of competition in front of thousands of your peers? If you answered yes to any of those, I want you to send me an email right now at thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com because I'm looking for guest hosts to bring brand new decks onto the show for deck battle episodes after the new adventure cards are released this month, including I need someone for the very next episode. So if you're interested, send me an email and we'll get you on the schedule. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to The Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOREPORTER at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to episode 76 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I am joined by the Arena Master once more, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going, Josh?
Good. Now, how long has it been since you've been on here?
It has been 53 weeks.
Whoa! Wait, you counted them?
Well, it was July 20th, so that was 52 weeks.
So just a little over a year.
Yeah, a little over a year.
Awesome. So the last time you were on, you kind of talked about Arena, and we brought you back like, I don't know, it feels like it's almost like a State of the Union address, which is like something the president does here in the U.S., where once a year, I don't even know if it's once a year. Once a year, he comes out and just says what he's thinking about, how everything's going, what he thinks people should be doing. And that's kind of what we want to do with the arena, because we don't focus heavily on the arena in this show. It's mostly about, you know, building constructed decks and learning the game and getting better. But Ryan, you kind of focus on the arena. Would you say that is it still your primary kind of focus in the game?
Yeah, I mean, it's my primary enjoyment. Unfortunately, I've definitely just, you know, as things get older and you get more and more chaotic, you have less time to game. I kind of clear quests using Tavern Brawl and even just, you know, getting the ladder to 15 or 10 just because, you know, get your golden cards. But yeah. When I want to get serious, I bust out the arena.
Yeah. Well, I mean, man, doing quests with Tavern Brawls is just so easy. Like when it's the random ones, it's just like, okay, I need to win two games with Priest. I'm just going to play four games, and I'll get crazy lucky on two of them and win. It'll be great.
Yeah, it's definitely a coin flip, and if you start losing, you just concede because it doesn't matter. Give someone else a win.
Feels, and then they're just super happy. They do the thank you emote, which may or may not be sarcastic. It's hard to tell sometimes.
No way to know.
I always feel bad like when I get really lucky in those. And then the opponent just starts spamming like, wow, amazing, wow, amazing. I don't know if they're bitter or if they're actually excited for me.
That's my favorite part of them replacing the sorry emote because it was too sarcastic. And I feel like the wow emote is even more more troll than
the
sorry.
The change did not have the intended effect.
No.
All right, so Ryan's back on the show to share Arena stuff with us. Before we jump into that, though, and talk about the news, which I'm super excited about. We actually delayed the show, so people that have been listening, there's been a gap. We delayed the show a bit so we can make sure we talk about the new exciting news coming up. But before we get into that, why are you happy this week, Ryan?
I mean, I'm happy because this is the culmination of my birthday week. My birthday was on Wednesday this week. My brother came into town last week, and we went and stayed out on the Columbia River up the border of Oregon and Washington, and just had a great time. And now it's kind of ending with getting to be on the Happy Hearthstone again. So, yeah,
nice. It's a great.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for spending your birthday week with us.
It's kind of like the perfect ending present to the week. So hopefully, hopefully I can give something back to the listeners. And
awesome. So now I don't have to feel bad about not getting you a present, because inviting you on the show was my present all along.
Yeah, can't put a price on that.
There you go. So I am super happy because I got to go to Comic-Con last weekend. I didn't think I was going to, and I ended up getting a ticket at the last minute. So I just went on Sunday, and it was the first time I'd been to Comic-Con where I hadn't booked any appointments or interviews or anything. So I just got to enjoy and just walk around the floor, look at comics. I met a couple writers for kind of smaller comics that I'd found recently. And because they were small, they were just sitting at a booth and had time to talk with me. So I got to talk with them for like half an hour about making comics and all the cool stuff they're doing. It was just really fun.
What did you dress up?
No. So all right. There's like only really two characters.
Did you go as Peter Parker, unassuming King's journalist.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a brunette. Does Peter Parker wear glasses? Mm-hmm. I think he does. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I was basically Peter Parker. Man, I like it. There's only two characters that I like enough in comic verse that I would want to cosplay as. One is The Question, which is the greatest comic book character of all time. And then the other one is Tim Drake, who's Robin. But I'm old enough that I would feel weird dressing up as Robin, right? Like, I'd feel a little bit like a creeper or something, like, hey, come on, Batgirl, compose with me. Yeah. I couldn't do it.
I know. It's the creepy older guy thing. It's real. Yeah. It's totally real.
So if I ever cosplay, it's going to be as The Question, because he wears, like, a face mask thing where you can't see his face, and he has, like, a blue trench coat and a hat. And it's like, so no one would even know how old I am. No one would judge me. It'd be great. But then I'm at a hot convention all day with a really long trench coat and hat and something covering my face. And that just sounds awful, too.
Yeah, comfort is important.
Yeah. So have you ever cosplayed?
I guess, no, I mean, Halloween doesn't count. So I'd say
What's your favorite Halloween costume of all time?
Favorite Halloween costume of all time?
I know, I'm putting you on the spot here. You didn't think you were going to get asked that.
Okay,
today,
so this is pretty bad. When I was in college, the first time I'd grown a full beard for Halloween, I shaved it into a Charlie Chaplin toothbrush mustache and I dressed up as a riot cop and like went to my friends' houses in town and kind of like kicked the door down and scared them and then took off the mask and looked like Hitler. So that's probably the
wow
the best.
That's an intense Halloween costume, dude.
Yeah, I used to be pretty crazy.
I understand. In college, you know, that sort of stuff just happens sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes you just shave your beard into a Hitler mustache and dress up as a riot cop. And
well, I'm glad you at least took the opportunity to terrorize your friends. Yeah, that's the important part.
Exactly.
All right, so let's jump into news. So because it's been long enough, we actually had a small patch where nothing really important happened, but the Refer a Friend event came out. So just so in case you haven't heard by now, if you can refer a friend, which basically invites them to create a Hearthstone account, and if they level up to 20, you unlock a Murloc art for the Shaman class. And then you also, I think, you each get a free pack. But the secret here is because very few of us, I think it's safe to say, still have friends that haven't played Hearthstone that are going to, right? Like,
yeah,
all of my friends that I could convince to play Hearthstone, I already have.
Yeah, you did like 2 years ago.
Yeah. So this is a little late, but you can just make an alt account. Just use another email address you have, refer a friend yourself. You just have to level up to 20. It doesn't take that long. A buddy of mine actually has been doing it at work. He just keeps it like alt tabbed and then in the background, because when you're playing against the innkeeper, the AI, there's no time limits. So just like whenever there's downtime at work, he'll just alt tab over, make a couple moves, go back. But of course, the big news is
this is a place of funky magical phenomena. Anything goes for one night in Canada.
Oh man, I love that song so much. And that's, of course, One Night in Karazhan, the new adventure pack coming out. And the cool thing, we'll just give you the basics, because you've probably heard of it by now, but we want to talk about it a bit. Everyone gets a free prologue mission, and you get a couple cards out of that. But then there are four wings, just like the normal adventures. There's the Parlor, the Opera, the Menagerie, and the Spire. And if you don't know much about Karazhan, it was a raid in World of Warcraft. And you should just go look it up, because it has some really interesting fights. Like, the key standout is there's a chess battle. Whereas one of the first fights, I think, in WoW, where you didn't actually, like, do combat against each other, you, like, basically possessed chess pieces and had to beat the other person. It wasn't, like, a full game of chess, but the same idea. And then the opera, where you'd go onto the theater stage, and then a different play could be happening each night. Like, the one I remember most was Little Red Riding Hood, where you had to fight the big bad wolf, and he would chase someone, and they would get a huge speed buff, and they would basically be Little Red Riding Hood, and they'd have to run away from the big bad wolf while everyone else is taking him down. It was just a really creative kind of... It wasn't a goofy dungeon, because there's still, like, undead and ghosts and all that sort of stuff, you know? But it had a lightheartedness that, I mean, is just perfect for Hearthstone.
Yeah, I really liked what they did with League of Explorers. I think that was by far the best adventure yet. And mm-hmm. I think that they're going to one-up themselves again.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, one of my favorite things from League of Explorers was that minecart adventure.
Yeah.
Where you have the special cards, and they've already said that the chess event that is going to be in the Karazhan thing is going to be the same idea, where you have chess pieces in your hand, and that's how you play the adventure.
Yeah, so and they function differently on their attack, where they'll attack both pieces across from them if they're in between them. It's kind of a new mechanic.
Yeah, it looks really interesting. I'm super excited. But of course, on top of those four wings, there's going to be the usual class challenges, which are honestly like my favorite part of the adventures. Like, I really like the stories and stuff that are told in the adventures. But the class challenges, where they really tap into like special mechanics for each classes, are just really fun to me.
Totally.
All right, and they've mentioned that there's going to be new portal spell cards. Like, it's really weird. This phrase was like scattered a bunch of times on the webpage. Now, I didn't actually watch the live stream event that happened at 3 a.m. or whatever, but I know you did, Ryan.
I was falling asleep during it, but I did see Ben Brode come on stage in China.
So did they talk any more about what these portal spell cards are? Is it in every match or random board mechanic? It sounded like it's like a dungeon feature almost.
No, it's actual cards. And so there's going to be 5 new portal. Like, you know how there's the unstable portal already game? Yeah. And so they revealed a mage card, Firelands Portal, which is a 7-mana spell that you get a target 5 damage. And it summons a random 5-cost minion.
Okay, I get it. So it's just a bunch of new cards. The way it was on the website made it sound like it was like a special feature in the dungeon that was only going to be in the adventure or something. So that's really interesting. So you think like all the other classes essentially will get one?
Maybe the casters, because if there's 5, so maybe what then? Warlock, shaman, priest, druid, or yeah, I mean, not sure. They still haven't done. I think they're going to keep where neutral spells are not a thing. Seems like they're staying with that. So, I guess it sounds like maybe 4. Well, because it wouldn't make sense. Like hunters don't cast portals, and
yeah.
Probably who else? Warriors don't cast. Yeah, so it'll be the, like the non-casters won't get portals.
Okay. So, and speaking of new cards, there are 45 total new cards coming out. We'll put a link in the show notes so you can go look at all the cards rather than read them all out on the show. Because we are going to do a review episode. I'm lining it up with Scott right now. Hopefully, we're aiming for the end of August, probably around like the week of the 21st or so. So we'll have a couple weeks to play with the cards and test them out before we review. But Ryan, do you want to talk about like what's the coolest card you've seen so far, the most interesting?
Yeah, they haven't revealed very many as of the point we're recording right now. Yeah. But since I'm on for the arena, and in terms of the arena, one of the cards that they showed, which everyone will get for free as part of the prologue mission, is the Enchanted Raven, which is a common druid card, 1 mana, a 2/2 beast.
Which, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, because normally you're getting a 1-2, a 2-1 at best. As far as I'm aware, there are no 2-1 mana 2/2s in the game that are not summoned. No,
there's some 1/3s that have upside, which is, I would say, kind of equivalent.
Yes.
But no 2/2s.
Yes. So the difference with this is that I think in terms of the arena is that if you play a 2/2 on turn one, the next player can't play a 3/2 because then you're just losing it basically for free. And so I think it's going to shift the arena if Druid becomes a strong class that you will pick 2 mana 2/3s instead of 3/2s.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that because this is you said it was a common card.
It is a common. It's which common Druid.
It'll be really easy for Druids to get because it's in the new set as well, which means it pops more.
Yes. Yeah, we're gonna go into the details of that a little later.
Okay. So then I'll talk about my other card that I thought was interesting. Man, I picked a really hard to say one. Malchazar's Imp? Malchazar's Imp?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, it's a Warlock common. It's a 1-cost, 1/3, like we're saying, and has whenever you discard a card, draw a card, which is a really interesting mechanic. It's something that other card games have, like this idea of cycling. So in a lot of other, in like Magic and stuff, there'll be a lot of cards that are, you know, pay one mana, draw one card, discard a card. And so it's not necessarily gaining you card advantage, but it's letting you make sure you have better choices. And there's so many Warlock cards where discarding a card is bad, where that's the big downside. But suddenly here, I mean, if you have a bad card in your hand, boom, if you discard it and draw a better card, it actually turns it into a good thing. So I'm super interested to see what this does to Warlock and if there can be kind of a more discard-heavy class.
Yeah, it definitely, they keep adding cards that they want discard Warlock to be a thing, but maybe someday, maybe this will be it. Maybe this will be the tipping point.
What do you think if they made the discard less random, right? Because in a lot of
if you could choose the discard?
Yeah. Because that would, I think, would make it infinitely better. If you want to make it worthwhile, I mean, what if that was this guy's text instead of random? You get to choose when you discard or something.
I mean, it would be very strong because usually when you play a discard card in Warlock, you're just like, don't discard this card. You're basically chanting for it not to discard the one or two or. You know, you're hoping for the best one. So yeah, if you could choose that, it definitely makes it much stronger.
All right. So if you want to check out more about One Night in Karazhan, including that awesome cinematic that you heard a little bit of, but you can watch the whole thing. It's just amazing. It's coming out August 11th and it's going to cost $20 or 2,800 gold. So, all right, let's jump into the arena because that's what we're really here to talk about, Ryan. So, like you mentioned, you're on the show about a year ago. There's episode 52. We'll put a link to it if you want to go back and listen. Because the cool thing about the episode is, as we're looking back on it, it's actually pretty timeless. It was a lot of just kind of basic info, right?
Yeah, there's definitely some things that I said that, I listened to it this week. And some of the things I said, I was like, oh, why did I tell people to pick Priest? Like, that was definitely wrong. I definitely made some mistakes. But Mage is still good. Because we kept it very general. If you're starting out in Arena and you want to just get better, get the basics, it still holds up.
Yeah. And so if you don't want to go back and listen to the whole episode, I'm going to give you a quick summary right now before we jump into the new stuff that is going to avoid the basics. So we're not going to repeat the stuff we said last time. We're going to jump into basically the state of the Arena now. What's the meta like? What classes are good? What's the best strategy for each class? What's the best cards for each class that you're looking for? And so I think this will probably be our sort of format in the future. So it's more updating, giving you new information to count on. So here's a summary of what we did last time. You have to get all classes to level 10 to get in. 7 wins is the threshold you get where you can go infinite, meaning that you can get the rewards needed to buy another arena for free so that you could keep playing forever without paying money. we wanted you to choose your most comfortable class, and when in doubt, like you said, we recommended Mage, Paladin, and Priest. So we're going to update that definitely this time. And we said for the first 10 picks in the arena, just pick the best cards regardless of mana. Don't worry about the mana curve. Arena was aggressive at the time, the meta, so we said 1 and 2 drops were very important. You had to get stuff on the board early. We said you can't have too many removal spells. You want at least 2 to 3 AoE spells that can just clear the board. And we recommended watching the opponent's mulligan to make better choices with yours. And that was, I think, the thing that we got most feedback on from the episode, where people wrote in and said, like, I never even thought about that before. Because people are like, yeah, okay, I know mages are good. Yes, I know I should, you know, draw cards and stuff. But I never thought to look at their mulligan. And then we gave some examples for how to use the coin early game, when to know when to use it, and then also when to know when to go to face and when to trade in arena in particular. So does all that still feel pretty solid before we continue, Ryan?
Yeah, it definitely, the basics are the same.
Awesome. All right, so let's get into the state of the arena 2016. Card-wise, what's changed? Just in the big picture.
So it's really interesting because we recorded right before the release of the Grand Tournament, and we were even speculating in the episode, and it was interesting because it was the end of the Blackrock Mountain meta. Basically, the way to think about the arena is that there's a meta for each expansion. And in the last year, we had the Grand Tournament, the League of Explorers, and right now we're at the end of Whispers of the Old Gods. A thing to think about that we didn't have a year ago is that there's entirely new mechanics that have been added to the game. We now have Inspire, which is essentially, if you use it correctly in Arena, it's an infinite card advantage engine. Yeah. Joust, which favors higher cost minions, slower decks. And Discover, which is... Discover is amazing. Discover lets you, it essentially lets you get an arena pick within the arena once you're in the situation of the game, and you get to make the best pick out of three for the exact situation that you're in.
Yeah, it's super interesting. Like, especially in arena where you make those choices the whole time, it is basically like, you know what? I don't want to make my choice now while I'm drafting. Let me make the choice in every single game I play instead. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. And then lastly, with the Wrath of the Old Gods, they excluded C'Thun and his cultists from the arena, from the draft. But in playing today, so I grinded a bit of arena today just to have a little more basis for what I'm talking about. And C'Thun cultists can come up from random cards.
Oh.
Or discovers. They're actually in the formula for that. So even though you can't draft them, C'Thun cards can show up in arena through other means.
Okay. That's kind of nice. So at least you have the choice then.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so that feels interesting. So I think, well, I guess we'll get into how the meta shifted later.
Sure.
So that's good for the overall what's changed. And of course, we'll have a Knight in Karazhan really soon added into the arena meta as well.
Yes, exactly. The other kind of most impactful thing that it literally got revealed right after we recorded in the explanation of the TG of the Grand Tournament. So I guess for reference, when I say TGT, Grand Tournament, LOE, League of Explorers, Whispers of the Old Gods, I'll just say OG, just so everyone's on the same page and say the whole thing every time.
It's cool. It's like we have a secret code.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But so they revealed for TGT that in the arena draft that they offer bonuses to the newest release and to class cards. That basically you have these two different offer multipliers, that you have 100% to class cards and roughly 50% to the newest set.
And so that means class cards are twice as likely to pop up as neutral cards, right?
Exactly. Wow. Which then means that the newest class cards show up much more frequently.
Oh, yeah.
And makes...
Those multipliers add together. So the newest class cards would have 150% additional chance.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't know exactly the order, if they're multiplied together or if they're... no one other than Blizzard actually knows their formula, but it's known that the newest class cards show up more. And the reason behind this is that it makes arena feel the impact of each expansion, because if you didn't have these offering bonuses, then as the card pool gets bigger, like right now they're going to add 45 new cards. And if you don't add the bonus to the 45 new cards, you're not going to
see them.
Yeah. Exactly. And it makes the class feel unique. Like you retain the class identity by boosting the class card offering.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So this next point you have here, I never realized that this is crazy.
Yeah, that the draft, you're guaranteed rare or better on picks 1, 10, 20, and 30.
I mean, has that always been the case, or did that change?
Yes, no, that's always been the case. Like, if you noticed, if you start a new draft, your first, you'll never be offered a common on your first pick.
Interesting. Yeah, I totally never realized this. That's just really cool.
And additionally, the odds of being offered epic or legendary are very low. Basically, 10% for epic and 2% for legendary per pick, not per run. And so generally your deck is going to consist mostly of common basic cards and some rares, which means that playing around epics and legendaries isn't really a thing to worry about in arena.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
The caveat, right. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to move on. So,
I was just going to say real quick, the caveat being, sometimes if you're playing and your opponent's playing real funny and you can't figure out why, and you're like, do they have Deathwing? Then then go ahead and play around Deathwing, because sometimes you'll notice just your opponent starts playing very, like, especially, I mean, if you're at low wins, sometimes it's just because they're bad. But especially if you get to like 7, 8, 9 wins and all of a sudden your opponent isn't playing cards and isn't really doing anything, then you know they're trying to bait you into a big clear.
Yeah. All right. Nice. So can you give us just a quick recap of what the meta is like nowadays? Because last year you said it was really aggressive at the time. Is it still true?
In a sense, the meta is shaped by the newest neutral commons and class commons. The old god meta is slower than previous metas because of the addition of good neutral taunts like the Infested Tauren, Psychotron, and really kind of the MVP of OG is Bog Creeper. Having said that, tempo is still really important. And so the difference between tempo and aggro is it's blurry. Basically, if you don't get on the board, you'll still get punished. But you have these really good taunts that will slow down and stall out aggro decks.
Okay. Very cool. So I guess that makes sense. So do you think when the adventure comes out, have we seen enough of the cards to know what you think is going to happen when the adventure comes out?
So the knowledge of the offering bonus means that you have two things that happen when a new expansion comes out. You have the removal of the current offering bonus, which it affects it because all of a sudden cards like Bog Creeper, Faceless Summoner, these really good kind of omnipresent cards that you're always seeing are going to become less prevalent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that side of things. I was just thinking about the new cards coming in, but like you're saying, all these really good taunt cards are going to become much less common.
Exactly, because they lose their bonus. And so the meta will naturally become faster just by virtue of the OG neutral cards. I actually looked at all of them yesterday. There's not really cards in the old gods that favor aggro. They're not aggressive by nature. They're all like pretty slow cards. And so the kind of, I mentioned before, this addition of Enchanted Raven being a druid common class card, which means that in your average druid draft, you're probably going to be offered the Enchanted Raven like 3 to 5 times, which is going to push you, if you're drafting a druid deck, it may push you to be like, well, I'm getting all these aggressive cards, I'm going to draft an aggro druid. And if aggro druid is just able to not be stopped because there's no big taunts and there's no like AoEs, that it may be enough. That card alone, we'll see, but that may be enough to move druid into the top three.
Wow. It's crazy to think that just a single card like that can make that big of an impact. All totally. Right, so let's keep going on with kind of the meta. What classes are doing best right now? Before, you'd said Mage, Paladin, and Priest were recommended. What do you think now?
Well, it's before I didn't say Rogue, and the reason I didn't say Rogue in the basic episode last year is I think Rogue is probably the highest skill class to play in the game because of the combo and the weapon and the planning ahead, that I didn't want to recommend Rogue to new people, but really Mage and Rogue are the top. Like, it's disputed which one is better, but they're if you know how to play Rogue, then it's one of the best.
Okay. And is it just because they have good removal? Because that seems like the one characteristic between those two that are similar.
That's definitely part of it. They are the most consistent classes because they have the best hero powers and the best basic class cards, which, yeah, as we said before, are offered at a higher rate than other cards. And currently, their OG common class cards are very strong.
What are they? I don't remember.
Okay, so Mage just got, in this expansion, got Twilight Flamecaller, which is a 3-mana 2/2 battle cry deal 1 damage to all enemy minions.
Oh yeah.
Which is great against aggro. So you're going to be able to put him down, or if you need like an AoE ping across the enemy board, it's very strong. And Faceless Summoner, which is a 6-mana 5/5 battle cry, summon a random 3-cost minion, which is
so good.
Yeah, it just like huge value. If you think about it, it's extremely difficult to destroy Faceless Summoner with one card, because how are you going to deal with because even if you deal with the 5/5 with one card, the 3-cost, which is roughly going to be like a 3/3-ish, something like that, it's going to take another card to kill it.
Yeah.
And so those cards are offered at a very high rate. So if you play Arena right now, in the couple weeks before Karazhan comes out, you're going to see, if you're against a mage, you're going to see Faceless Summoners. You're going to see Twilight Flamecallers too, but I mean, Faceless Summoner is a really good pick.
Yeah. All right. So what about Rogue? What did they get?
And the Rogues got Shadow Strike, which is a 3-mana, deal 5 damage to an undamaged minion. And I kind of cracked up about this because in you and Scott's review, Scott hated this card. Yeah. He didn't think it was good. I'm guessing because he doesn't play Arena very much.
Yeah, he doesn't play Arena at all.
Sure.
I don't think. He's totally constructed.
And so the reason that Shadow Strike is so good, if you think about it, as Rogue, you're trying to control the board. And so to do 5 damage for only 3 mana is that's the best. There's nothing in the game right now that does that. And the downside of it, it has to be undamaged. When somebody plays a 5/5 across from you, the turn that you're going to remove it, it hasn't taken damage yet.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it good. And then they also got South Sea Squidface, which is a 4-mana 4/4 death rattle, add 2 attack to your weapon. So it's basically a 4/4 for 4, which is fine, combined with a deadly poison.
Yeah, which is crazy. And it also has an amazing name, South Sea Squid Face.
Yeah.
All right, so what classes are doing the worst right now?
So the bottom of the barrel is Priest and Hunter, as they have been for quite some time.
Even Hunter. I'm actually kind of surprised to hear the Hunter is that bad.
Well, so the problem with the Hunter is that, well, with both of them, the issue is that for Arena, they have the worst hero powers along with Warrior, in that they don't impact the board directly. If you fall behind as Priest, Hunter, or Warrior, your hero power doesn't do anything in terms of the game. And their strong cards are too reliant on synergy to succeed. So Hunter, the reason Hunter is strong in Constructed at times, I think right now it's passable, but it's kind of, ebbs and flows, is that you can put all the beasts in your deck for your kill commands, but kill command, if you don't have a beast, isn't really that great of a card.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was always my trouble when I tried to play them in Arena, because I'd take the kill command, and then I'd get offer a bunch of cards, and one of them is like just like a mediocre beast, but I ended up taking it just because I needed a beast, and it felt like I was like trapping myself into having to draft kind of subpar cards just because I needed beasts. I needed that synergy.
Definitely. Beasts in general are subpar, other than the top ones, which are usually the Hunter class cards. But so combined with their hero power, if you look at the common class cards they were given for Old Gods, Priest got Darkshire Alchemist, which is a 5-mana 4/5 battle cry heal 5, which again, it doesn't really do anything if you're losing. Like, it'll heal you for 5, but if they already have the board full, it's not going to matter. And then their other common is Hooded Acolyte, which I don't even know the stats of it because it's a C'Thun card, so you can't pick it in Arena.
Yeah.
And then Hunter was given Fiery Bat, which is a 1-mana 2/1 death rattle, deal 1 damage, which is it's fine for aggro, but it doesn't you're not going to win games generally off of Fiery Bat. And Carrion Grub, which is 3-mana, oh, they're both beasts, 2/5, that is kind of, I guess, just a target for, when I saw it, it looked like they're just putting a target for Houndmaster.
Yeah,
which in Arena, I mean, it's if you can get the Houndmaster synergy, it's amazing, but
I mean, you're lucky to get one of each of those in your deck, and then the chances of drawing both of those in a close enough time frame to make the combo, it's just
So the kind of the point of this is, the reason I listed these is, if you compare the cards that Priest and Hunter got to the cards that Rogue and Mage got, if you were a Priest or a Hunter and you could pick any of those Mage or Rogue cards, you would.
Yeah.
But you can.
I mean, I think anyone would just be like, Faceless Summoner, yes, give me that card.
Yeah, if that was neutral, it would be a very high pick.
Yeah. All right, so you mentioned kind of Warriors having worst hero powers. Are they near the bottom too, or are they doing all right?
They've gotten better. So at the time that we recorded last year, Warriors were terrible. It was, if it wasn't the worst, it was right there with Hunter and Priest. And Arena Sensei Adwukta started a campaign, Arena Warriors Matter. really campaigned Blizzard hard, that it's his favorite class, and he was very upset that it was so bad. And kind of to prove the point that these class commons matter is that in LOE, Blizzard added the Fierce Monkey and the Obsidian Destroyer, which Fierce Monkey is a 3-mana 3/4 with taunt, and then it's a beast for no reason. And then Obsidian Destroyer, which is a 7-mana 7/7 that at the end of the turn summons a 1/1 with taunt. And those two cards alone, because of the offering bonus and the class bonus, brought Warrior out of the dumpster, basically.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's continued to be viable because in Old Gods, they got Nizzaw's First Mate, which is a 1 mana, 1/1. And then you also get a 1/3 weapon, and Ravaging Ghoul, which is a 3 mana, 3/3, which does a whirlwind effect when it comes onto the board. So those are, so basically for a class not to get worse when a new expansion comes out, they just need to not get terrible cards.
And specifically class cards, like, you're not too worried about the neutral cards having class synergy or anything like that. You think the class cards in particular really affect it.
Yeah, because they're offered at, like you said, double. You're going to see them twice as much.
Okay, cool. So that's a good kind of overarching thing. But we want to give some specific strategies for each class so that when you're playing and say you get stuck with Priest for whatever reason, or you really want to try and see if you can make it work, we want to talk about kind of, when I go into the arena as Class X, what am I realistically hoping to build at the start if I get good options? Because a lot of times, like, I just kind of go in aimlessly, just picking, okay, these are cool cards, these are cool cards, these are cool cards. And then I'm not thinking like, oh, well, Mage is best at, you know, tempo right now, so that's what I should be doing. Can you give, just kind of for each class, some basic tips about what people should try to build as their kind of goal?
Sure. It's going to be based off of the classic class identity. So if you're familiar with... They tried to make the classes originally have kind of this classic archetype from WoW that shapes the identity and how the class plays. Good removal it's pretty much a must pick now. It's getting scarcer and scarcer. So if it's there, you want to pick it. Given those conditions, this is an order roughly of best to worst right now. Mage is going to be strongest at playing kind of either a tempo, a mid, or a control game. You're going to get lots of removal. It's really the most flexible class right now.
So all three of those are viable.
Yes, exactly. So that's the archetypes that I'm listing here are the strongest archetypes given their general class cards that you're going to see.
Okay, cool.
And also the synergy of their hero power.
Cool. And just because we haven't talked about it on this show, can you give just a super brief summary about what tempo is, what mid is, and what control is?
Sure. So I think the spectrum generally is aggro is the fastest. You're going to have a low curve. You're going to be trying to kill your opponent by maybe like turn 6 or 7, end the game, because if you don't, you're out of cards, you're out of steam. A mid deck, a mid-range deck is generally curving out around like 4 or 5. You're gonna the goal of it is that you're gonna be able to counter aggro by just having slightly larger minions, and you're going to be able to race down control before they can play their big cards. Control's goal is to get to the late game where they're going to win with their very large cards, their big taunts. And the way that they're going to get there is that they're going to need either early minions or removal to combat aggro and mid-range. Tempo is... It's kind of hard to describe, I think. I guess I should maybe read it more. But the point of tempo describes taking control of the game. Instead of just playing a minion on the board, it's a minion that does something as it's played, if that makes sense.
Okay. How does that help you win? Other than, I mean, it just sounds like a minion that does something is better than a minion that doesn't?
Yes, that's true. Because okay, so think of it this way: if your opponent has something on the board and you just play something on the board and then you pass the turn back to them, now they have the initiative and they get to decide how they deal with your minion. If you play something that removes their minion from the board and puts something on your side, their options are more limited in how they retake control of the board.
Okay, and it's different from a control deck, which is about clearing the board, because it's also putting minions on the board early?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah, you can... Yeah, you can have tempo. Like, tempo is a... It's a concept within the archetypes that will... How do I say? It's a concept to keep in mind as you're building your deck, that you have things that are proactive that do something, and it's not just all reactive.
That makes sense. I mean, and that's kind of the same idea where it's like you don't want a deck that is only removal spells, right? Because then you have to wait for them to do anything before you can make your move.
Exactly.
So this is kind of the opposite of that, having cards that you can always play, I guess. Is that kind of fair to say?
Yeah, that's tempo. I think like the best example that I can think of we'll mention a little later, is like Dark Iron Dwarf, who's a 4-mana 4/4, but then also is able to give something +2 attack that turn. And so you're playing a strong body on the board, and then you're also basically letting something else trade up if you have something on the board. And that gives you a huge amount of tempo.
Yeah.
And so the reason that tempo is a viable archetype for Mage is because the removal spells are so cheap and efficient. So you can conceivably... So it isn't necessarily just like a card that does two things. It can be something like on turn 4, you play a 3/2 and you play a Frostbolt. That's a ton of tempo.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, the classic deck I always think of is Mech Mage when it comes to tempo, because they had a ton of cheap robots that all buffed each other and did different perks when you did things, and then a bunch of cheap removal spells just like that.
Definitely.
Okay, cool. So Mage is tempo, mid, and control. Super flexible. What's the next class?
Rogue is going to favor a tempo mid-range game. Also has great removal. You want to draft removal. It's, again, you can debate back and forth, but it's also very flexible.
Interesting. I would have guessed control for Rogue just because of how much kind of removal and stuff they have. Do you think it's a little more mid than Mage?
Yeah, because the thing with Rogue, the reason control isn't a archetype for Rogue is the Mage hero power, you don't take damage when you ping. With Rogue has the best early game hero power because you basically 2-for-1, you 2 damage for 2 mana, no other, Hunter can do it to face, but no other class can direct. It's extremely efficient, but the trade-off is that you take the damage to your face, and so by late game, if you've been playing properly, you're probably at roughly 10 to 15 health, and you need to end the game, otherwise you're going to die to burn.
Wow, that makes total sense. Yeah. Okay, cool. What's the next class? If the two best classes are gone, what am I looking for?
The mid range here is probably all pretty close. So the order doesn't necessarily matter. You could potentially go off like personal preference. I put Warlock here just because the Warlock hero power is the best hero power in the game, because you get essentially free card draw. Where if you get to the late game, you're drawing two and you haven't taken too much damage, you're drawing two cards for your opponent's one. The easiest, probably most efficient way to draft Warlock right now is an aggro tempo style, which essentially just think of it like a zoo deck. You're just drafting low cost minions that, if you can get some like buffs, some abusive sergeants, some shattered sun clerics in there, you're gonna be good.
Okay, so are you going for any demon synergies in there, or is that kind of thing of the past now?
I mean, if it presents it, so I guess what I would say is if you get independently strong demons offered to you, pick them. And then if you start to see that you have demon synergy and you get offered demon synergy cards, then go ahead and take it. It would probably be really greedy to just try to go in drafting a demon deck, and you'll probably end up with a weaker deck.
Sad days. Well, just like constructed. Aw.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, what's the next class?
Right now, Shaman is also really strong. This is actually my most recent 12-win run was with Shaman in the Old Gods. Thank you. It was epic. So I'll mention it at the end here. So Shaman is going to do the best kind of with a tempo mid-range deck, strong removal. There's a lot of totem synergy now. Flame Tongue Totem is a really high pick because it lets your totems actually do work.
That's the one that gives things next to it plus two attack, right?
Exactly.
Cool.
And then you have because you're spitting out so many totems and maybe smallish type minions, if you can get buffs like a Direwolf Alpha, I mentioned the Flame Tongue Totem, I just blanked on the 6/6 for 7 that buffs everything +1/+1.
Oh, the Stormwind.
Stormwind, champion. Yeah, Stormwind champion. That's totally it. And then Shaman also got a new. It's kind of like a sub mechanic. It isn't actually. No other class has it, but Evolve got added in two forms. One in a card, which transforms all of your minions to something, a random minion that costs one more than it currently does, and Master of Evolution, who's a 4/5 for 4, so he's a Yeti already, and then he has the evolve effect as a battle cry. He gets to target one minion and transform it into something that costs one more.
Yeah, which, I mean, we've talked about evolve a lot on this show lately, just how good it is, because it's a heal built in. You can use it on battle cry minions to get tons of value out. So you think that's probably made a pretty big difference for shamans in arena?
Well, okay, so maybe this is a little personal bias.
Sure.
But in my 12-win run, I evolved a King Crush. I got a King Crush off of Evolve.
Wow.
8/8 with charge.
Charge. Oh, my God.
And then another game I evolved and got Grommash Hellscream.
What?
Yeah. Wow. And so not only and I was using it in a way like I had already basically eaten a minion, and so the minion was damaged. So then I was basically just using it as a heal.
Yeah.
But then on top of it, I got a minion with charge. The warning that I will say on this is be careful about evolving things to 5 mana, that the result will be a 5 mana card, because Fellreaver is a 5 mana card.
Oh.
And I got against, that was one of my losses, was against a druid that got Raven Idol into Raven Idol into, he just had like 6 or 7 spells and totally decked
like
me.
The perfect counter.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, it finally, you know, the evolve.
Evolving into 2 as well, because Doomsayer is the first thing I think, like, ooh, that would be bad.
Yeah, so that's always the risk you run, because your totems are 1 mana. If you have the spell evolve, and you have totems on the board, there's, I mean, whatever it is, like a 1 in 90 chance of it turning into a Doomsayer.
Doomsayer, yeah. Okay, awesome. All right, who's up next?
Warrior if you get a good draft, is really strong. If you run into Warrior at high winds, be prepared, because it's going to be scary. Strongest is going to be at a mid-range control deck. Weapons are going to be, you're going to want to draft weapons. Fiery War Axe.
Like, is 5 too many? Because I never know like how many I need to take.
Sure. It depends what they are and how many you already have. So you can probably have like 2 to 3 Fiery War Axes, because if you have a Fiery War Axe on turn 2, you probably just won the game.
Yeah.
But Deathspite is a really good card still. It's rare. Like, probably don't play around Deathspite, but if you get offered it, even Aconite Reaper is also a good card.
Okay.
And if you can get taunts and removal, you'll be able to make up for the weakness of your hero power. And that's kind of why it it kind of naturally shifts more to a control, because if you can stave off early aggression and go to late, you're going to be able to heal out of range of more aggressive decks. They're not going to, if they can't finish you, you're going to armor up and they're not going to be able to kill you.
Very cool. So with weapons and removal that you put in there, for weapons, are you talking like weapon synergy stuff, like the things that buff your weapons, or are you just caring about like we just need weapons to punch things?
Weapons are good. I mean, if you can get the synergies, what is it? The
upgrade
is definitely an underrated card if you already have weapons, and even a naked upgrade is a 1/3 weapon for one can let you control. You know, basically anything that gives a non-ping class a ping is actually better than you would. It's better than it is in constructed.
Yeah, because Arena in general is more focused about controlling the board, right?
Exactly. Because you're not, it's unlikely you're going to have, I mean, it's pretty rare that you're going to come up against a combo deck that someone's going to be able to, you know, Worgen, Enrage, Rampage, Charge. You know, you're not going to get the OTK warrior in Arena.
Okay, very cool. And then for removal, with warrior, their removal has always been pretty weird to me. Are you normally going for like the armor based removal, like Shield Slam? Or are you going for like whatever the
execute?
Execute.
Yeah, execute is really strong. And even Shield Slam, because if you are able to build any kind of armor, you can remove, you know, you can remove 8 health minions pretty easily
for 1 mana.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, very cool. Who's next? We're on the second half, on the bottom half. So are the rest of these classes not good? If they pop up, you would choose any of the other ones?
I mean, it depends. I mean, well, so if it was Paladin, Hunter, Priest, I'd probably pick Paladin, who I put next. Paladin is going to be strongest at a mid-range tempo control deck. The weapons that Paladin has are very strong, so you definitely, if they're offered, you want to take them. And the buff cards are also strong. The classic Blessing of Kings, the Blessing of Might. There's lots of buffs that let your tokens, your recruits actually do work. Trade up.
So do you actually go for that synergy? Do you like grab the guys that like the, I forget who they are, the 2/5 that buffs all your tokens?
Probably not. I will say, I mean, I lost to a Paladin today that muster for battle on turn 3. It's really hard to beat.
Yeah. It's just so much. I mean, they're just 1/1s, but with the weapon, it's 4 damage to your face every turn.
Yeah, it adds up fast. And if you can't. And then it really is if they're able to leverage the value of a 1/1 into killing a 3 health minion, then all of a sudden you're falling so far behind on card advantage.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. So Paladin Token, which is a really common constructed deck, is not something you want to aim for in general in Arena.
I mean, if you're offered the cards, I mean, I wouldn't go for the synergies in, you know, in the first 10 picks, but if you have some good picks, then you get offered a card that you evaluate your draft and you say like, oh, if this situation comes up, kind of the way that I look at that stuff is it a win more card? And if you're behind, is it worthless? So if you're behind and it doesn't do anything, then you probably shouldn't pick it. But sometimes if you can just see, like I've had times where I'm drafting and it is a close pick, and I look at the cards and I say, you know what, this card is going to win me one game. I'm going to win one game because of this card. It's going to be the perfect card in this one situation. And it's happened where you're just, you get that, you know, like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, what's his name? The bad, the 5/4 with taunt. Not the heckler, the old one. The classic one. I can't even remember his name. In my Hearthstone close.
I don't even remember the classic one.
I know. He's so bad. He's a 5-mana 5/4, but it was the pick where I was just, I was like, well, you know what? This taunt, I'm like, there's one game I'm going to need this taunt and he's going to win me the game. And it happened.
He totally did.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's a, if you want to be good at Arena, that's kind of just like how you have to approach it is you have to, calculate what your odds are and whether or not there will be a payoff to what you pick.
Yeah.
Or if the payoff is too pie in the sky, like that's a very low payoff, right? Cause the payoff is just like, hey, I need a taunt. You know, it's not, the payoff isn't like, oh, if I have 4 tokens and then I put this guy down and they all become 3/3s, then you win the game. And you're like, well, if you had 4 tokens on the board, you were going to win anyways. So
yeah, that's true. Okay, what class is next?
Next up, Druid, who without all the cards revealed yet, I'm putting Druid as my sleeper to jump up into the top three in Karazhan. Because Druid already favors a tempo mid, and potentially with this Enchanted Raven, I think it's called, it could potentially be able to push an aggro Druid style. But removal, you want removal with Druid. Druid has really good buffs also. And then there's also growing beast synergy in Druid. So if you can get it, it's pretty broken. And this new Raven is a beast for 1 mana. So it's potential you could have something where you know, for 1 mana, you play the Raven and then you play the next card and you get your beast synergy for 1 mana more.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Who's after that? Oh, I guess it's just Hunter and Priest left, right?
Hunter and Priest, which are in tough spots because they're hero power. Hunter can be successful, but it really relies on you going aggro tempo, getting charges, getting direct damage. If you can get beast synergy, your goal is that you do enough damage early that you basically put them on a clock with your hero power.
Okay, so charge, a lot of not even removal spells,
but yeah, direct damage
you can put right to the face.
Yeah.
Okay, is there any sort of like secret synergy that you could pull off in Arena, or is just it's too hard?
I mean, of course, if you get Eagle Horn Bow in a secret, like that's that's pretty crazy.
Because I'm never sure if I should take, I'm totally blanking on the name, the 2/2 that gets a secret from your deck.
Oh, no, the Mad Scientist.
Yeah, because no. Like I don't have a secret yet, but I'll
probably no. Get a secret. The only way I would take the Mad Scientist is if, so Mad Scientist, I believe, is a common. Mm-hmm. It would have to be the other cards were worse. Like it was like a 1/1 in a 0/4. And then you're like, well, even without the synergy, that's the best card. Cause that's, I mean, that's how it goes sometimes where,
yeah.
I mean, I just had to, pick, 2 runs ago, I had to pick the Murloc Oracle, the 3-mana 2/2 that both people draw 2 cards because the other picks were so bad. That was the, like, it's a terrible card. Yeah. And you're like, well, at least I get, you know, like I get some cards.
Draw 2 cards.
Yeah. They get 2 cards. We get a tiny body on the board.
Yeah. See this, I'm loving this episode because to me, that Mad Scientist, I mean, that was a class defining card for a long time where like, of course, hunters want as many of those in their deck, at least in constructed.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to hear, okay, in Arena, I need to make sure I throw that out the window. I think I drafted it many times in Arena just cause I knew it was really good in constructed. So I kind of hoped it was as good.
Well, yeah. Cause I mean, it's really good in constructed cause you get to put however many secrets you want into your deck.
Yeah.
In Arena, like you might literally be offered 0 secrets. Yeah. That's just the, you know, just
or you get offered misdirection and you're like, do I take it just because I can have the synergy?
Eye for an eye. I won one game. I think I bragged about this last time, but I still, it was embedded in my mind. The game that somehow I don't even, what was it up against that eye for an eye was the best card.
Yeah.
But I won a game where they had to attack into my face and eye for an eye killed them.
Oh man.
I felt so bad for them.
You're probably like one of 10 people on this planet that have won because of that card.
Oh, such a troll pick.
All right. Well, then is Priest.
Yeah, finally we have Priest. The reason I put tempo here, the hero power really lends itself more towards control. As a priest, if you get tempoed out, you're going to lose because your hero power doesn't do anything. And your cards generally aren't that strong. So if you can tempo into your, you have some decent removal, like your shadow words are good. Priest has really good buffs. And if you get some taunts that you can keep alive and heal, take the game to late, you can potentially grind someone out. But I actually just, my new goal is that I want to get 12 wins with the classes that I don't have 12 wins with. And so I just drafted a priest deck, which is not going to go 12 wins. but I drafted it very, very more like aggressive tempo than control, partially because of what I was offered, but also because of what I've been playing against. The decks that I lost to were decks that just turn one, turn two, turn three, turn four, turn five. And if you missed a turn or you fall behind, you just lose.
So are you relying on like a lot of neutral minions there? Cause I mean, Priest doesn't really have many tempo cards, do they?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely relying on, the neutral minions.
Okay. So I gotta say, Ryan, looking at this deck, all but one of these classes, you said tempo is a valid archetype. Is that the state of the meta? Or do you think, I don't want to be accusatory here, but do you just prefer tempo? And so you think it works well for you?
No, it is the state of the meta. Like I just said, the decks that I've lost to are what I just said. Maybe not like, so this meta slowed a little bit where it used to, like I said, a year ago, if you could get on turn one, it was huge. But yeah, if you fall behind and they keep playing cards on curve, which, you know, keeps giving them tempo, then you can, the thing that I ran into when I just played a couple mage runs was that they would get me low enough that I couldn't trade fast enough before they killed me.
Wow. And so, yeah, then you're just behind and without like heavy AoE. I mean, and that's the situation reason why we said early on in the last episode, you need to take a few AoE spells. Like you just need them. Cause that's the situation where that's the only way to come back. Right?
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Cool. All right. So that's the basic rundown of the strategies for each class as you dive in. Just a reminder, I'm going to read the order, but all this will be on the show notes as well if you want to read. So mage, from best to worst, mage, rogue, warlock, shaman, warrior, paladin, druid, hunter, and then sad priest at the end. Yeah. And we've talked about some cards, but I wanted to give just a quick run through, because the show's already running a bit long, about just on if it's turn one, every single class card is available to you. Which one do you take for each one? Just to help people know that, like, oh, if, like we mentioned, if we see Flamestrike or whatever, I don't know if that's your mage pick, but if you see Flamestrike, you have to take it. Like, because I always wonder, like, what the card is. So maybe, like, for each class, do one that's, like, a basic or a common, and then a rare. Because we were talking earlier, and we talked about including epics and legendaries, but it's just so rare for you to see, like, 2%, like we said, to get a legendary.
Yeah.
It's not worth. If you see a legendary, you take it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to because it's three legendaries, but it's not worth us sitting here and talking about like, oh, always take Ragnaros because I mean, I have got Ragnaros before, but honestly, like, it didn't do that. But yeah, it's so, yeah, I mean, really, Arena is shaped, the meta is shaped by common and like the class commons and the, to a lesser extent, the rares.
Cool. All right, so how about we just go through each one? Let's just do alphabetical this time so we don't worry about confusing people with order.
Sure.
So let's do Druid, two best cards.
Druid, common, swipe, self-explanatory, super value. Rare, Savage Combatant, which is a... This is an Inspire mechanic card, which I kind of alluded to earlier, is infinite card advantage. Because if you can get this guy to stick, all of a sudden, when you hero power, you're doing three attack instead of one.
Oh, that's... I didn't recognize the name, but that's the bear dude, the buff. Every time you use your hero power, you get two attack.
Yeah, 4 mana, 5/4. So it's a decent card of itself. But so if you play it on turn, ideally in Arena, what you're doing is you're playing it on either if you have board control, you can play it on turn 4. But if you play it on turn 6, it's a lot of tempo because you play the combatant, you hero power, and then you get to hit something for 3, which is probably going to remove a minion.
Yeah.
That they weren't expecting to happen.
Yeah. I mean, talk about tempo play. I mean, this guy is like the epitome of tempo, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's infinite tempo, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. How about Hunter?
Hunter, basic, common, Glaivezuka, which was...
Wait,
the...
really? I would not have guessed that.
So
for the removal?
Yeah, exactly. Because having the attack on turn 2... is can as Hunter you can potentially win the, like, so if you are able to put something down on turn 1 and then they play, you know, either a 2-1 or a 3-2 and you're able to Glaivezuka, remove it, your thing goes face. And
is Glaivezuka buffs a random minion with one attack?
Yeah,
is that right?
Exactly. So it's kind of like a poor man's Fiery War Axe, but Fiery War Axe is just that good that
The poor man's version, you first pick.
Yeah, because as a hunter, you're gonna be incentivized to draft aggressively anyways, and there's not really a card more aggressive than Glaivezuka.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a name called Glaivezuka.
Yeah, it's just a cool card anyways. And then is your rare, Savannah Highmane. I mean, if it was a neutral,
so good.
Obscene value.
All right, how about Mage?
Mage, so this is kind of like my hipster pick, because Flame Strike is the highest rated card.
Yeah.
And I actually in my draft earlier today, I was offered Ethereal Conjurer and Flame Strike in the same choice, and I was like, well, I got to put my money where my mouth is and pick Ethereal Conjurer. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah. And
so
because
just
my
Discover mechanic is so good.
Exactly. Because so you're discovering a spell and you can only discover class spells. So you're discovering a mage spell. And the mage spells are generally really good. And so the odds of getting 3 bad picks is really low. And my thought process was like, well, if you need a flame strike, you can just discover a flame strike.
Do you ever watch Family Guy?
Yeah.
Do you remember the episode where he's buying a boat, or he's winning a boat, and the guy offers him the mystery box instead?
Yeah.
And as he's justifying it to himself, he's like, it could be anything in there. It could be a boat. I'll take that. Like, that's exactly what it sounds like. Man, I want a flame strike, but the conjurer might give me a flame strike.
Well, and because you're combining, you're also getting the body. You're getting a 6/3 body, and you're basically adding an additional card to your deck that fits the exact situation. Because my thought process behind this was, is I've actually run into situations where Flame Strike, the way that power creep has happened in this game, sometimes Flame Strike isn't even enough, or it's too expensive. Like, if you spend your whole turn Flame Striking, like, yeah, maybe you kill 3 things, but it's like you don't even clear their board, and then you still have nothing on your side, and then they get to play more stuff, and it's like, unless you have another flame strike, it might not matter. So, like I said, this was kind of my hipster pick.
I like it. It surprised me for sure.
That's my, with my rationale being, if you need a flame strike, you'll discover it.
Because that's how luck works, right?
Yep, exactly.
It always works out. All right, what'd you pick for the rare?
For rare, I really like Flame Waker. If you can get the spell synergy and get those pings out, you can. It's another card that can kind of snowball the game away with real close. Honorable mention would also be the Blizzard, the 6-mana, 2-damage AoE that freezes everything just because more board clears are good. But the issue with Blizzard is, like, it's not always good enough to clear the board. And unless you already have a board, the freezing the other side effect doesn't necessarily buy you very much time.
Yeah. Okay, cool. How about Paladin?
Paladin, common, easy, Keeper of Uldumon. It's so powerful.
Oh, which one's that?
Being able, it's a 4-mana 3/4 that lets you turn any target into a 3/3. It just changes its stats.
Yeah.
So there's the reason that it's so good is there's two ways you can use it. You can use it as a tempo card on curve, where if you have a 1/1, if you have one of your recruits, you can buff the recruit into a 3/3 and then do something with it. Or if you have it late game and somebody plays something big like a Kraken or a Bog Creeper, you can turn it into a 3/3 and then be able to kill it easily.
Yeah, so good, man. There's so many plans of mine have been ruined by the enemy Keeper of Uldumon.
Yeah, that's really the reason under League of Explorers, just because of that card, Paladin was in the top three because of Keeper of Uldumon. Like, you couldn't... If you were offered 5 Keeper of Uldumons, you picked 5 Keeper. Like, there was no limit to the number of Keeper of Uldumons you could pick in your deck.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the interesting thing, right? I mean, you could build a deck with only Keeper of Uldumons and win, right? Because it turns it into a 3/3, and it's a 3/4, so it just automatically beats whatever it turns into.
You know, I didn't think about that. Did you try? Do you remember that Tavern Brawl where you could only pick 2 cards in your deck?
No,
I didn't try Keeper of Uldumon. That would have been
that either.
What would you?
I was too obsessed with, like, the weird spell combos.
Yeah, you were telling me you did the priest.
Power Word Glory and
Power
Mind
Glory
Blast.
And Mind Blast. So troll.
The only deck it lost to was the mage one that did the torch and frostbolt,
oh,
I think.
Yeah.
Or ice block.
Ice block, yeah, so they can't die.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but so Keeper good. Of Uldumon. Well, Keeper of Uldumon would have worked well against minion decks, but you would have lost still to the spell decks.
Yeah, to the spell decks. All right, anyways. So what's the rare?
Rare, Muster for Battle. Like I said, I lost earlier today. Turn 3, like, if you have Muster for Battle on turn 3, it's over. In Arena, it's so much tempo, it's so much value. There's really, it's kind of self-explanatory.
Okay. Cool. All right, what about priest?
This is kind of another hipster choice. I picked for the common Valen's Chosen, which is the +2/+4 buff, because it's one of those, like, snowball blowout cards where you have those games where, you know, they play a minion, you play a minion, and then it's their turn 3, and you're like, please don't have Valen's Chosen, please don't have Valen's Chosen. And actually, my first game that I played earlier on my new priest run, I have 2 Valen's Chosen in the deck, and that exact thing happened. Turn 3, Valen's Chosen, he played, you know, he played something, he thought he was all clever with 4 health, and I was like, well, guess what? He's got Valen's, game's over.
Did you use the taunts to spam them?
No, I don't usually.
Okay,
troll.
That's good.
I save the troll.
So actually, I totally forgot. I thought that Arena cycled out like standard.
No, Arena is wild.
Oh man, I thought the glory days of Valen's Chosen were behind us, but they're just in Arena.
No, and that's where we're going to go into it a little bit. But that's really what makes Arena so unpredictable now, is the card pool is very diverse, and like anything can happen.
Wow, I totally forgot it's wild. That makes me much more interested in playing it. I haven't played it in a long time.
It's really fun right now. It's pretty. Yeah. And so then priest, if you're going to go rare, you're going to go Akanai Soul Priest, because even without, of course, if you can get the circle and get the constructed combo, that's great. But even being able to, kind of similar to the Savage Combatant, if you can save the Akanai till turn six and you play the Akanai and then you're able to like turn your hero power into two damage, you can get a tempo swing that way too. And even have to play it as a 3/5, they're going to be incentivized. It basically has taunt, like even though it doesn't have taunt, it has taunt because if they can kill it, they're going to kill it because they don't want to be getting hit. It turns the priest hero power from the worst hero power into the best hero power.
Yeah. I mean, if they can't remove that card, there's a lot of times where it's like, oh great, I drew my 3/2. There's no point to even play it. Like I just have to pass my turn. This sucks.
Yeah, because otherwise it just dies for free.
Yeah. All right, how about Rogue?
Rogue, I went with Sap for the common because it's one of the highest tempo cards. If you can, it's like a pseudo removal where if someone spends 6 mana or 7, like someone plays a Bog Creeper, they just spent 7 mana playing a Bog Creeper, and then you play Sap and you only spent 2 mana, that's another way that you can swing tempo, is by spending less mana to remove something that they played. And even though it's not dead, next turn they have to spend the 7 mana again to destroy it, or kind of like I was saying, Rogue, you have to like push for the finish. If they put up a big taunt at the end, you can sap it and push for lethal.
Interesting. So with sap, because when I think of tempo, I think kind of more early aggression and kind of, but it sounds like you want to save sap for the later turns because you're getting more out of it because you're sapping their 7 mana, or if they drop a 2 mana taunt, are you sapping that too?
I mean, a 2 mana taunt, no, but I mean, so a tempo example would be like, say you have, you know, turn four, you have 2 3/2s on the board and they drop a Senjin Shield Master on turn four to put down a 3/5. And it's like, you're going to have to trade your whole board into it to kill it. If you sap it, you get to push your damage, and then you still have 3 mana left, or 2 mana left, depending on who went first. You still have mana left over to do something more, so that if they want to then just play the Shield Master again, they're a whole turn behind you now. It basically puts you a turn ahead of the opponent.
Interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting way to look at it. It's not the same as like, take another turn after this one, but it's not too far away from that.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, like with Rogue, you're incentivized to push face damage to end the game. And so like anything you can do to put on pressure and put them on the back foot is strong.
Okay, cool. What are you taking for the rare in Rogue?
For the rare, it's close, and this was the thing that was hard with it being the first pick. And so for the first pick, I would take the SI7 agent, which is the combo 3 mana 3/3, do 2 damage. I mean, really strong. This is literally the definition of a tempo card, because yeah. if they play a 3/2 and then on turn 2 you coin SI7 agent, you just put a 3/3 on the board and you just took out their 2 drop, you're way ahead at that point.
Yeah.
And it's even like 2 damage at any point in the game can be decisive. And then kind of honorable mention, which is generally rated higher, but I don't know that I would take it first, is because it's at 5 mana, the Iron Skulker, which does 2 damage to all the undamaged enemy minions. So it's kind of like an AoE backstab, which if someone's zooed out on you and on turn 5 you play Skulker and kill like all their little things, it's backbreaking.
Yeah, that guy is brutal. And I always forget that card exists because it doesn't get played much in Constructed, and I don't play Rogue very often. So like when I'm thinking about like, okay, what can he do to ruin my day? I never think about that card. So when it happens, it just catches me totally off guard.
Well, and it's a rare too, so it's mm-hmm. I mean it's possible they have it, but it's something like, oh, you know, I don't know, 1 in 50 or 25 chance that they even picked, because it depends like what it, else it was up against. Because I mean, that would be a, like, that's what I'm saying about like the first pick. If I was offered SI7 agent and Dark Iron Skulker in the first pick, I don't know what I would do.
Except I'd be really happy you got awesome picks in Arena.
Well, so that's the thing though, is sometimes when you have two really good picks, you're like, oh no, I wish I could take both of them. I mean, because that's really, you want both of them, is what I would say.
All right, how about Warlock?
Shaman.
I skipped Shaman. Yeah, Shaman.
Shaman, Fire Elemental.
That's always good.
You don't, yeah, there's nothing else to say. That card's broken.
All right, how about Rare?
And then Rare, my hipster pick, just because he did me so right, Master of Evolution. I mean, he's always going to have a special place in my heart after giving me Crush and
he's got your Grommash. Back. You gotta have his in here.
Even though he fell reavered me, I forgave him. I mean, he still got me to 12 wins. But honorable mention goes to Lightning Storm, just because Shaman doesn't really have AoE.
Yeah.
So that's why Lightning Storm is rated so high. So if you were offered a Lightning Storm, you probably want to take it.
Okay. All right, how about Warlock?
Warlock, common Imp Gang Boss. It's really, with the Warlock Zeus strategy, Imp Gang Boss is just a really annoying card to deal with. Even if you kill it, it spawns a 1-1, which then you have to deal with because the Warlock's going to try to buff it. And yeah, it's an annoying card. So that's what makes it good.
All right. And then
Rare, in the same vein, Implosion.
I miss that card so much. See, I need to play Arena just to play with these cards again.
Yeah, I got imploded earlier. And I got blown out because it removes something and then it puts a bunch of little, you know, freaking 1/1s on the board. And
And when it hits the four, you just
it's backbreaking. That's game. It's similar to Muster for Battle in that way, that if you on turn four, if you're able to Implosion and it hits for four, it removes, you know, a Dark Iron Dwarf, and then you get four imps.
Yeah, that's King Tempo right there.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, well, how about the Warrior? Let me guess.
Yep.
Fiery War Axe.
Yep, Fiery Wind Axe. It's literally, I think it's the best card in the game.
Yeah, I would probably agree.
Yeah, if every class could have a Fiery War Axe, they would play it. It's insane value.
And then, what about the Rare though?
The Rare was actually hard. I mean, in that it's interesting when I was looking through these, because I hadn't really done this exercise where I was like looking at all of the cards to pick out the best one. The Warrior Rares freaking suck. They're not good. And of them, the best, Frothing Berserker is a good card. It's not bad. But in how I was talking about like the tempo game, Frothing Berserker is like the definition of no tempo. It doesn't. If you'll notice, like most of the other cards that I picked here are high tempo cards. They all do something. And this is kind of the first card that you just play. And you're like, the idea is you play it and then you do your trades. And so for three mana, you get like a 4/4 or something like that.
Yeah.
But it is interesting because the Warrior Roars are Warrior Rares. Say that 10 times fast.
At the very least, I like that he's a lightning rod, right? If you have other more valuable minions in your hand, you can play this guy first. And if they have removal, they're going to blow it on him. Just because of the threat of what you could do.
Oh yeah, you have to respect the Berserker.
All right, so let's talk about neutral cards for a second. Because obviously you get a bunch of neutral cards offered as well. I don't want to do it for each class though, because we already went through each of the classes. So let's talk about the three kind of big archetypes. Is it fair to say that control, mid-range, and aggro, no matter what you're playing, you're going to fall under one of those?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about let's do control first. Turn one again, you don't know what deck you're going to make. You just know you're going to do control because you picked a class that's really good at control. So that's going to be your goal. What basic or common are you taking first?
Bog Creeper. It's the new hotness. It's 7 mana, 6/8. The stats are insane. It has taunt. It's going to eat. So the hard counter to this card, which I found out with my mage, is Flame Lance, which the card that everyone mocked, the 5 mana deal 8 damage to a minion. It happily eats a Bog Creeper.
Yeah.
And because it costs less mana, you gain tempo. But generally, the Bog Creeper is going to 2 or 3 for 1 your opponent. And he like essentially effectively heal you because they have to kill it before they can attack your face again.
Yeah. And I mean, especially if like you said, kind of more mid-range tempo decks are popular, this guy is the perfect answer when it comes around to turn 7 and they have their board filled with, you know, 3/3s, 4/4s, 5/5s.
Yeah, he eats them all.
Okay, very cool. What about rare?
Rare, you got to go with the classic Sludge Belcher. Just for pure value, it's really annoying. It comes out early enough on turn 5 and it has enough stats that it's generally, even if it doesn't necessarily kill what your opponent has on the other side, it's going to, your goal with control is to just to slow your opponent down. And so Sludge Belcher is really the definition of that.
Yeah, man, you're making me nostalgic for all these crazy control cards I forgot existed.
Yeah, I know. They all went away.
All right. So how about mid-range? What are you looking for in common?
Mid-range, I really like Dark Iron Dwarf. I think it's really like the definition of tempo. You have a good body. It lets you trade up. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Okay, how about rare?
Rare, I really like the Bomb Lobber, who's the 5 mana. He's only a 3/3, his body's small, but the doing 4 damage to a random opponent sounds bad, but as mid-range, you're going to have ideally controlled the board where the bomb is going to go where you want it to go,
yeah,
or it's going to be...
It's actually better than opponent, it's enemy minion, so it's guaranteed to hit something on the board.
Exactly, yeah, you're going to remove something, and it's like, if you remove all the little stuff... And then the Bomb Lobber cleans it up. It's another one of those cards that provides a huge tempo swing.
Yeah. Awesome. How about aggro?
Aggro, you're going to go with the hated Haunted Creeper. in the same way that I said the Imp Gang Boss was really annoying, the Haunted Creeper, if you think about the way I always like to think about it is when you play against a card and the opponent plays it and you groan because you know what it takes to deal with it, like that's a good card.
Yeah.
And so Haunted Creeper, even though it doesn't seem, oh, it's just a 1/2, oh, it just spawns 1/1s, but it really adds up, especially in aggro where you're looking to trade up and buff and control and then push face. It does a huge amount of work.
Yeah, I mean, that card I just hate so much because they play it and it's like, okay, even if I have a cool trick to kill it without wasting a card... Do I even want to kill it? Then they can deal 2 damage to me every turn. Like, I don't even want to kill it until I can kill the tokens too, but I don't want to leave it on the board. It's a beast. It could do beast synergy. Oh, it's just so stressful.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. What about the rare?
Rare. This was another interesting one with it. The neutral rares are not great. So I went with Defender of Argus just because if you have the board going into turn 4 and you're able to slam this guy down, you're getting +2/+2 that basically has charge, and you're either going to be able to do favorable trades, protect something that you want to protect, keep going face. It's it's just a really strong card.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, now you mentioned here that there's kind of another deck archetype you wanted to talk about. What is this madness?
Yeah, this is my honorable mention goes to the idea of the attrition or like grinder fatigue deck. There's lots of people have different words for it. I think attrition kind of has it's the most poetic way because it really is when you play against an attrition deck, you're sighing, you're holding your head, you're throwing your hands in the air. So basically think control, but even slower. A lot of times you'll see this deck at high wins, because it beats control, with tons of removal, tons of large cards. Its goal is really to win the top deck war and maybe even take the game to fatigue. And so it really needs the tools to survive early aggression, but it will easily win if it goes to late game.
Yeah, so I mean, how is this deck doing well if the meta is so tempo aggressive?
You have enough early game and board clears, like mid-range board clears to, okay. And taunts. Taunts are the other thing to make it to the point where you run them at, like, so against an aggro deck, if you're able to play taunts, have good removals, keep them off the board, you'll be, when you play a control deck, they're not gonna be able to beat you just because all your cards are bigger.
Oh, okay, yeah. That makes sense. All right, so what are some of these cards? What are you taking for classic?
And so, yeah, so the kind of classic attrition card is the North Sea Kraken, which was really like the best card of its time. 9 mana, 9/7 battle cry, do 4 damage. There wasn't a late game tempo card like this before. And the fact that it's a common, this is even a card like you would take it at a control deck. Yeah. You would probably take it in a mid range deck. If the other picks were bad enough, you would even take it in an aggro deck just because, like, if the game got to turn 9, you'd be like, oh, well, let's throw a Kraken down and
punch him in the face for 4.
Yeah, it's a brutal card. It's because you're almost guaranteed when you play it, you're going to kill something with the 4 damage. So yeah. you've already, you know, 1 for 1, and then they're going to have to use another card to kill it. So then it's pretty much a guaranteed 2 for 1, if not more.
Okay, cool. What about the rare?
And then for the rare, I picked the Sunwalker, which is the 6 mana, 4/5 taunt Divine Shield, which against the non-ping classes is really annoying.
Yeah.
Which, the way to think about this is generally the aggro classes don't have a ping, like Warlock, Hunter. They don't have a ping to take the Divine Shield off, so that you're basically guaranteed that they're going to have to run something into it.
Okay, yeah, that makes total sense. That's the taunt side of the attrition that you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. So before we wrap up the arena segment and get into community, you had some tips you wanted to throw out for kind of the more advanced, building on the basic level tips we talked about last time.
Yeah, I just had a couple things I want to mention real quick. The first is draw first. This might seem basic, but I still see way too many people, they'll do a bunch of plays and then they draw last. And when I call people out on it, like I have friends or, you know, if you ask people about it, they'll be like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. And if it doesn't matter, then you should draw first anyways, because if you get a card that changes your line of play, and you draw it last, you feel like a real dum-dum.
Yeah, it can't hurt to draw first.
Exactly. And so, I mean, I'm kind of putting this out there at my own detriment. I mean, I love the Happy Hearthstone listeners, but it simultaneously makes me like be like, oh, this person's terrible. And then just also makes me groan when someone draws last, because it's just one of those things that you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, no, I understand. All right, what else you got?
I wanted to do a little update to the trade face debate. A couple nights ago, I was watching the Grinning Goat stream. Merps was streaming, and he had a perfect incidence of when to trade and when to face. And somebody asked him, well, why did you decide to start going face there? And his quote was, once you run out of good trades, go face. And I think it really encapsulated because I think I talked about flipping the switch a year ago. Yeah. And that's when, once you're like, oh, it's too, like, I'm gonna have to trade my whole board into this. And you're like, well, just go face then.
Yeah. That's interesting. So once you run out of good trade, so if you don't have a good trade, if there's no good trades on the board, go face.
Yeah. Make him do the trade at that point.
Okay, cool. That's a good way to look at it. I hadn't heard it said so simply. I like that.
Yeah, that's why I wrote it down. I really, and I'm crediting it to good old Merps, because it was all him.
Awesome. All right. Any other tips?
Yeah, and this I don't want to spend too much time, because I know we got to wrap it up. But this, if people only take one thing away from this whole thing, I think this is kind of the most important concept going forward for the arena, is the idea of dilution of the card pool and removal spells in particular. Mm-hmm. So basically, compared to this time last year, a year ago, there are now 311 more cards, bringing the current total to 877. In 2 weeks, there's going to be 45 more cards. There's going to be another expansion later this year that's probably going to add about 130. Even with the class offering bonus, which is where most of the efficient removals are, removal is at a premium now because of the continuing dilution of the card pool. Functionally, this means that you, unless you can play around a removal like a Flame Strike or a Consecrate, you shouldn't really worry about it because the odds are that they won't have drafted it, let alone drawn it in that game.
Interesting. So even though new cards are being added, not as many removal cards are being added as other cards, and that's why it's diluting?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they're not adding removal cards at the same proportion that they're adding other cards.
Okay. And there's nothing in Arena that says we're going to make sure they get spells or whatever that we know about or anything like that.
No, it's entirely possible now that you will have a mage draft where you'll be offered zero flame strikes, which it used to be, you know, back in Classic.
You could get four or five.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you were pretty much every mage you played against, you knew that they had one or two flame strikes.
Yeah.
And you played around it. But basically, because of this, like all the premium removals are, they're just not off it. They're just not offered anymore. And so that's kind of why I was saying earlier, if you're offered it, you want to take it. And kind of the caveat to this is that take into account how many wins you're at, because by about around a seven wins, opponents are more likely to have premium removals because that's how they got there.
Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense. And actually, kind of in tangent with that, what we really should be doing, right, is looking at what removal is in the most recent set. Because that's what they're most likely to have and look and be like, okay, they have a really gnarly thing that only affects damage minions. And so you should play around those removal cards more than anything else, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that basically from now on, when a class receives a new common removal, it's probably going to see a boost in its win percentage during that expansion. And specifically, the only one that they've revealed so far is the Firelance Portal that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. which on surface, it's interesting because you're like, okay, 7 mana, 5 damage, that's not great. Yeah. But then it summons a random 5-cost minion, which is on average going to be a 5/5. So you're like, okay, well, that's not bad. But basically, the point is that removal is offered at such a low rate. If you're offered a Firelance Portal, and especially because it's in the common slot, you may see something like Firelance Portal, freaking Wisp, and abusive Sard. You know, they'll just be the other picks will be so bad that you'll pick the Firelands Portal just because it's removal. And then at the same time, how we were talking about tempo before, it actually creates tempo. It puts something on the board as it's removing something. And so my prediction is that it is something that people are going to pick, and you're going to see it once Karazhan comes out.
Oh yeah, that makes total sense. Okay. I'm excited because I wasn't really excited by that card, but I can see in Arena, you know, that's there's some potential there.
Yeah, I think it's definitely it's too expensive, it's too slow for constructed, but it, I mean, you will see it in Arena because kind of like I said, I picked a freaking Murloc Oracle or Cold Light Oracle. If my choice was between Cold Light Oracle and Firelance Portal, I'd take the Portal.
Every time, yeah. Okay, cool. So any other parting thoughts on Arena or advice you can give before we move on?
No, I've rambled enough.
This is such a good brain dump. I learned so many things. And so all this stuff will be in the show notes on the website. If for nothing else, because I know when I play Arena, I'm going to load up this page and go back and read through it and be like, okay, I'm going in as I'm doing Hunter. What I'm gonna try it. What do I need to do? Okay, charge, damage, beast. I'm going face. Let's make it happen. I'm excited. Cool. Thanks for sharing all this.
Oh, my pleasure. It's definitely interesting, especially the diving into the picking. Oh, you have choice. You can pick from any of these cards, and it's a way that I'd never looked at Arena before, and never kind of looked at the spectrum of cards that you can pick from, and seeing that some classes were really hard. There were like four cards that I was like, ugh, I want all of them. And then other classes were like, these are kind of all pretty bad. Hopefully it's valuable for people, because it was fun for me to do.
Yeah, I think it will be. Just the reminder that stuff like Implosion and Sludge Belcher in there, that immediately makes me want to go play Arena. I'm going to play right after this episode. I just got to find out. All right, so we got a question from the community this week talking about the new Knight of Karazhan expansion. Om asked, how many wings will you buy, and will you spend gold or real money on them? I mean, I'm buying all the wings. You could not stop me from buying all the wings. They could price it absurdly high, and I'd probably still buy all of them. Nobody tell Blizzard that. And I'll probably just pay real money. It's just easier to just get it all at once, pay up front, and be done with it. What about you?
I would do real money, but I don't like the card back that they're offering with it.
Oh, okay.
It's too purple. It's too much purple. I'm not purple. Yeah, I'll be honest. Purple is not my favorite color.
Yeah.
And I'm also, cause I've been playing the game for so long now, almost 3 years. And, I have, pretty good self-control. I have, I think, around 11,000 gold right now. So,
oh, my word. That 2,800 is no big deal.
Oh, nothing. Yeah, I'll just have to work a little, because my goal is to keep. I try to stay around 10,000 in the bank. So I'll just have to grind a little bit to get back to 10,000.
Nice. Well, that's cool. Hey, it gives you a goal to work towards. Nice. All right. So, but you're going to be buying all four wings, right?
Cards. The cards. And then I really enjoy what they've done with the adventures. It's a fun diversion. And then I've also made a point. I've done all the heroics.
Wow. You have?
Yeah.
So hard.
It is. And I'll be honest. It was really more on Naxxramas. I had to like look, you know, read what other people were doing, because there's some of them that are so hard where it isn't necessarily like you might have the deck that wins it, but if they get the god draw, you're not going to win anyways.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, I was like, you know what, I got to look and make sure that I'm doing this right. And I'd look and it would either be like, oh yeah, I'm playing totally the wrong deck, or, you know, there's lots of different ways to go about it. But the card pool is so big at this point now, which it's fun to like play it. And then you'd be like, okay, like how would I go about this? And then you come, you know, your brain works the way it works, and you come up with something. And then, you know, once I'm done, I look online and see what other people did. And you're like, oh, other people had a totally different approach. And, I think it's worth it. I think the heroic card backs are also, usually pretty cool. Hopefully this one isn't purple.
Well, you can see what they think it is over on Hearthpwn right now. It has some, I mean, well, I guess it's hard to tell. It's kind of grayed out.
Mm.
But it's got, you can see like the basic outline of it. And they're saying that they think this is what it's going to be, because they data mined it. All right, so we got no iTunes reviews. So if you like the show and you'd like other people to find the show and listen to us, we'd appreciate you going on there, giving a 5-star review, and we'll read it on the show in the future. No donations as well, but if you want to do that, you can visit gamediplomat.com/donate. Normally we do kind of sponsored things for when new expansions come out. I don't think it really makes sense to do it with adventures, but if you want to sponsor our adventure and pay for the $20 it'll take to buy it, you know, set up that donation. I'll make sure I'll do a stream and just for you. Card of the week. Are you ready?
Uh-oh.
I know you've already been talking for a long time. Now you got to sing.
I know. Let me drink some water. All right. Card of the week. Way down on the bayou. You're going to find them fish, man.
are you gonna hear me? Card of the week.
That was amazing. The fish man is gonna get you. But which fish man, Ryan, oh, which fish man is gonna get me?
Once again, arena themed. It's gonna be the Corrupted Seer. He's a really unique card that I don't think he saw constructed play.
No,
because I think
who he was, honestly,
Murloc decks fell off. But the reason he's so unique is that he's the first neutral AOE that isn't a death rattle. Previously, we had cards like Explosive Sheep or Abomination, or legendary like Baron Geddon, or conditional like Wild Pyromancer, where it triggers after you cast a spell. And basically what this means is now all classes have access to a consecration / hellfire effect in the mid game.
Can you read the stats and tell people how it works?
He is a 6-mana 2/3 Murloc whose battle cry reads, deal 2 damage to all non-Murloc minions.
So, I mean, that's a 6-cost minion. I mean, because the cool thing about consecration and hellfire, those are like 3 and 4 costs. This comes so late, though.
Yeah. It does, though it's one of those cards you have to play with to see how good it actually is, that it can be the difference even if the opponent has bigger minions than you, if you're able to trade into them and take them down to 2 health. And first of all, like the non-Murloc minions thing is really not a concern, because the times that there are Murlocs in arena are, it's generally not a concern. In the mage run that I was running last night, this was the only AOE in my whole deck. And I had a turn where my opponent actually cleared my board with a Wild Pyro combo and ended up with 3 things on the board that were all at 2 health. And I was finally able to play my Corrupted Seer, and he was out of cards. It cleared the board. It's definitely situational, but like the way to think of it is that Consecration is a 4-mana card and a 2/3 body is roughly worth 2 mana. And so that it's actually costed fairly, with the bonus of combining multiple cards multiple effects into 1 card, which is added value when you can only have 30 cards in your deck.
Okay. All right. I'm buying in. I'll trust that I need to see this more to get on board with it.
And also, I mean, the other thing to think about is it's in the rare slot. So you have to take into account what else it's up against. And some of the rare cards can be really bad.
And yeah, you mentioned earlier, actually, that it's kind of hard to pick a rare.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, there are some really good rares, but there's also some like pretty mediocre rares. And so basically the situation in which I was offered this guy was the other rares were not great. And I had, as a mage, I had no AOE. And I was like, you know, it was actually that exact situation that I talked about earlier, where I was like, you know what, there's going to be a game where this guy's going to win me the game. And he did. He won me 1 game.
Nice. Hey, and that's all you can ask from a card. Because if you could draft 8 cards that win you 8 games or whatever, perfect. You're already infinite.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, very cool. That's awesome. I'm really excited you picked this card, because I don't think I've ever seen this card actually get played. So it's fun to kind of hear about it and see it.
It's one of those cards, like I said, when it gets played against you, you're mad. You're real mad.
Yeah. All right. So if you want to check out all the awesome advice Ryan gave today, all that's in the show notes, along with links to cards and stuff that we talked about, any videos we mentioned, all that's on gamediplomat.com. And as always, we'd love to know what you thought of the show, what you'd like to see added in future episodes. You can find us on Google+, Happy Hearthstone, on Twitter, I'm @JAugustine. Or email me, thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com. or just leave a comment on the blog on Game Diplomat. And if you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us. You can find more info at gamediplomat.com/donate. Ryan, where can people find you?
I can be found at rkivs on Twitter, at rkivs. And I was even thinking about earlier today, I mean, I don't know if it's anything anyone's interested in. I'm not the greatest player in the world, but I have some friends that I kind of coach them and you know, ghost their games. So if anyone is interested in getting some, you know, another perspective on their play and their draft, I'm willing to offer that up if anyone's interested.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, especially if someone kind of got inspired, kind of like I did by this episode, to jump in, but you're kind of fresh, getting some actual play-by-play advice as you go through would be really valuable, I think.
Yeah. And then I also, I really want to shout out a semi-new podcast that I've been listening to, The Light Forge. It actually started right around the time of our episode last year. It's Adwicton Merp's twitch.tv/grinninggoat. And it is a Hearthstone podcast that is exclusively Arena. They don't deal with Constructed. Their Twitch stream is all Arena. They do co-op arenas with other top Arena players. And a lot of my thinking towards Arena has definitely been affected by their thought process, but they definitely come from a very analytical, very knowledge data-based perspective. And if you thought what I had to say was interesting, then these guys are definitely the next place to go to.
Yeah, and it looks actually like they maintain a tier list for cards in Arena.
Yes, their tier list is quite good.
This is extremely exhaustive. Is this every card?
Yes, yeah, it's every card, and you can sort it by class and rarity. And there's a search function. And so, like, they'll give you the tier. So, like, even when I was drafting earlier, especially I was drafting Priest, which I haven't played Priest recently, and I had some picks that I was like, ugh, I was like, I don't really know which one of these is better. And, you know, you go, you look at the tier list, and one card is 20 points above the other one. Then you're like, oh, well, that one's better. And then, like, kind of once you see the number differential, then it'll kind of like pop into your head, like, why you're like, oh yeah, this card kind of is that much better because it actually does something, or oh, its stats are better, or it's not conditional, like whatever it is.
This is really cool. So I'll definitely put a link to this in the show notes. Highly recommend checking it out, and a link to their podcast as well, because if they're putting as much thought to maintain this sort of deck list, they are worth listening to.
Yeah, definitely. If you like Arena, they're my top Arena podcast. I don't know that anyone else is doing an Arena podcast.
Yeah, I know some people have like segments and stuff, but this is the first only, and they do. I mean, they do a show every single week. It's good. Cool. Awesome. So while we're promoting shows, I want to also remind people that I launched a Game Diplomat podcast, which is another podcast I'm doing on the site. It's just a solo cast, so it's just me, and it's like 15 to 20 minutes long, and it's all just about indie games and small little games that you probably haven't heard of, that you might have missed, that I think are really great and worth playing. And if I can really try and hard sell you on it, I've talked with all the game developers and gotten them to send me codes to give away on the show. And the show has so few listeners, like I only have like 70, 80 people listening, that so far, if you guess, because what you have to do is I do a trivia question about the game on the show, and if you guess the right answer, you get a code in theory. But so few people have even guessed that if you just send in a guess, you win a copy of the game. Like you just get everybody that has sent in a guess has won so far. So if you like free games, come check out my podcast there. I'd appreciate it. We just did Darkest Dungeon, which is
an game awesome. So good.
Do you know that game?
Yeah. I played that game in early access a bunch, and then played it a bunch when it came out. It's a I love how they they model the psychological effects of dungeoneering that isn't really most games kind of gloss over the reality of fighting all these monsters and how it would affect the people doing it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, my favorite thing is like how they can have like this really stressful moment and get a trait like abusive or something, or yeah, selfish. And it's not just like, oh, their stats go down. It's like, no, they will actually start verbally abusing their teammates, or if they're selfish, they'll start stealing loot from you. And it's like, what? It's so crazy. Unexpected. It's really fun.
Yeah, the break point is it's really the most exciting point in the game, because when someone ends up with a positive trait, like they're like valiant or courageous, and you're like, yes! And like the whole party's morale goes up, and then they're just like this huge badass.
Yeah, they get this big buff, and they just start crushing face.
Which doesn't happen that much, which is why it makes it.
But that's amazing. What makes it so good when it does happen. It feels like a real win.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so check out that show. That's on GameDiplomat.com as well. But even if you don't, thanks for joining us on Happy Hearthstone. And Ryan, thank you for joining us on the show.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was really fun having you on to talk arena again. I hope people get really excited about this. If you enjoyed the episode, let us know. And so we know if you like this kind of format for arena episodes in the future, or if you have suggestions about sort of questions you have about arena that we could address on this, let us know too. And thanks for all the listeners for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
See you next year.